Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm getting up soon in the morning.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about tangerines and how they can protect from a long list of chronic illnesses. We're also going to look at aluminum, how easy it is to get into our body and how it can lead to dementia, but how silica can decrease the risk of aluminum toxicity. Where do we get that? I'll share a list with you, so get a pencil and paper ready. Also, one of the most overlooked vitamins is the B complex, and that's unfortunate because it also happens to be one of the most important. So I'm going to share with you the conditions you may not be aware of that show a vitamin B complex deficiency and what's good about the B complex. Also, avoiding the sun will kill you much faster than embracing it. The latest research on that and much more on health and healing. Also today, we'll be having a guest in the second part of our program, and I'm going to allow more time because I think it really needs to be heard. John Potash. John is a investigative reporter, a human rights activist, and a social worker. And his work has appeared in Z Magazine, Covert Action Quarterly, the Baltimore Chronicle, C-SPAN's American History, etc. We're going to talk about how the U.S. government and the CIA have used drugs as weapons against American citizens. Also today, short pieces that I believe are very important. A young person talks about the truth about today, and mind you, this is not when we were going to school and learned some critical thinking skills, but today the truth about school for your first 12 years. Then Prince EA, why I got rid of most of my friends, and if time permits, from The Guardian, there is a report by the Young Turks, the most dangerous cops on the planet, and what it tells about us as a society today. Also, standing by, if time permits, I don't think it will today, but now I'm doing a series. I've done 51 programs with major commentaries on the police state, fascism, totalitarianism that is full-blown, wide open right now in the United States. And the signing yesterday of the Trans-Pacific Partnership against all of the reasons not to shows how blatant their movement is. And so we'll continue. The only pushback that we have at this time is to have some courageous, conscientious, real patriots who, like union leaders, who call for general strikes city by city. Because if we don't do this, if we don't protest the Trans-Pacific Partnership, then like everything else in America, we will dumb down and accept it. Someone stopped me this morning while I was getting a juice to come to work and said, with all that you say about what's wrong with our government, what we can do as individuals, why isn't there more action? And my answer was relatively straightforward. We're not in enough pain yet. What do you mean we're not in enough pain? And then this person proceeded to tell me what he considered pain. And I said, well, why don't you take a look at the uprising in Egypt and Tunisia, the pushback in Ireland, austerity programs where professors are now dumpster diving, where people that had some secure future there now don't because their pensions have been cut, the price of everything's gone up, and they can't even afford to live in their former homes. They're homeless. And if these were decent human beings, I said, they're suffering. We've lost homes, and we have hungry children, but of the 18 million hungry children, the 1.6 million homeless children who go to school and have no home, the 22 million Americans that have been forced out of their homes by sheriff deputies and banks taking them back, show me a single protest. Anywhere in America, show me one. Show me a protest against the exploitation of senior citizens who are on food stamps, who cannot afford their medicine, their utilities, and food. Show me that protest. Now, I've been all over America. I travel more than any person I know looking for the truth on these matters, because you can't find it in a textbook and you can't find it in these stupid universities I refuse to even lecture in anymore. I'm so embarrassed by the dumbing down of the professors and playing it safe or playing it political or playing it the way they've been paid through their departments. So where exactly is our movement? When are we protesting? I'd like to know. So until we're in enough pain, and we're not in enough pain, we don't have enough people in prison, we don't have enough rights taken away, we haven't had enough doors kicked down, we haven't had enough people shot in the back, certainly not enough white upper middle class people. When was the last time you saw a millionaire, billionaire, a person worth $100 million shot in the back, walking away from a police officer? When was the last time you saw someone, kids coming out of a Westchester white school, stopped and searched? Just curious. Like to know. I can show you 600,000 that were stopped and searched in the last year in New York City, in the boroughs. So we're not in enough pain yet. Or let's put it a different way. The people who are the policymakers and opinion leaders have never been in pain. And if they're not in pain, they have no reason to change. And if other people are aligned with them, then they have no reason to change. They want some things different. They just don't want to be out there making the sacrifices. So now I'm going to be doing more commentaries on fascism at every level. And I'm going to also be reading commentaries from people. For example, I was going to read one today, but there won't be time. The merging of government and Wall Street into one criminal entity, the rising tide of state fascism in the United States. And that is by one of the most insightful, brilliant thinkers on the planet, Joachim Hagopian. And that'll come probably tomorrow. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. First up, tangerines. Why tangerines? Most people don't eat them. They're kind of thought of as the skinny little relative of the orange. In point of fact, they're extremely potent. In fact, the smallest of those little citrus, the kumquat, is loaded with nutrition, hard to eat. You have to kind of throw it in a blender, the skin and all, seeds, and then put a little manuka honey in and then do it as a smoothie. Then it's palatable. For most people, they try one bite and say, this is worse than a lemon. But it's extremely healing. Now, according to Green Med Info, and an article published in Diabetes, done at the University of Western Ontario, tangerines are extremely nutritious and can actually protect you against obesity and type 2 diabetes, even combat atherosclerosis, the underlying cause of most heart attacks and strokes. The study that was done, effects of the metabolic syndrome in humans, and had enormous impact. So here's the takeaway message. When you take some tangerines and throw them into a blender and put everything else you want in there, you can put your protein powder, some walnuts, some any other nuts and seeds, your liquid, you're protecting yourself against a long list of chronic illnesses. And that we could all benefit from. Now, one of the things that we don't look at is aluminum. And you get the most aluminum when you get all these vaccines, because aluminum is in almost all. And all the toxicological science, everything shows that it's a neurotoxin and really destroys your immune system. So why in the world would you take one of the most toxic elements on Earth that is known and proven by thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature to destroy neurons and hence the brain and put it in vaccines? You've heard me say there's no cure for stupid. Well, much of our entire scientific community, academia, comes from a flawed premise that they're starting with official mandates and they're rewarded for official results, even if the results are all failures or negative. No one challenges the methods or the effort, and they simply accept the results. So they put toxins into food products like deodorants. You get aluminum in your deodorants. You can buy non-aluminum deodorants, natural deodorants, but that's not where the profit is, and that's not what's sold. So how much aluminum is in your drinking water? It's hard to tell, but in a 15-year study, they found that regular consumption of tap water was associated with aluminum toxicity and increased prevalence of dementia. And how might the accumulation of aluminum from just tap water alone affect your cognitive ability as you age? In the 15-year study, researchers found that dietary aluminum from water sources could be a risk factor for developing dementia. They also found a helpful solution. They found that the mineral silica, S-I-L-I-C-A, could help decrease the risk of aluminum-induced dementia. And this was published in the American Journal of Epidemiology. It was a 15-year study. They followed 1,925 patients over a long period of time, and that's what they came up with. So, the problem, aluminum in drinking water. The solution, filter the water, and or get mineral water, and or use silica. And makes all the difference in the world, especially for the brain. Now, where can you get natural silica? Well, it's simple. Oats, millet, barley, potatoes, whole grains, Jerusalem artichoke, red beets, corn, asparagus, and rye. But your two superstars that give you lots of silica, oats and millet. And those are both good in any circumstances, so get your millet, get your oats, get your silica, help chelate out aluminum. Now also, if you're taking the power drink that I'm hopeful many of you are taking, where you start your day with the juice from two lemons, about a quarter teaspoon of vitamin C, buffered, green apples, cucumber, and if you can, get it, wheatgrass juice. If you can, it's okay. And green apple is your, and cucumber are your two major juices. But that's 16 ounces. You drink that down with vitamin C, you're going to chelate out aluminum, mercury, and other toxins. And that's important. On the question of B-complex, when you eat sugar, as most people do, you drain your body of the B-complex vitamins. Chronic stress, you destroy your B vitamins. Poor sleep, you destroy B vitamins. Infections, the same. Chronic inflammation, like arthritis, heart disease and diabetes, the same. Constipation, the same. Vomiting, the same. Fever, the same. So how can you improve your B-complex? Well, you can take a 25 milligram B-complex tablets, inexpensive, easy. That's easy. Or you can try to get it from vegetables. Organic fruits and vegetables, that's good. Probiotics, and reduce your stress, get a good night's sleep, and just a high-quality multiple vitamin. Now, finally, people have to be very careful. For those of us who are baby boomers or over the age of 45, who have spent the earlier part of our lives in our teen, college years, and thereafter, not realizing the downside of sun damage. And you start to see that later when you look at your skin, and your skin looks like it's thinning, and hence you can see the veins underneath, or you see little brown spots, aging spots, they're called, serrated pigments, moles, and you start to see that the skin around the eye starts to crinkle, around the neck it starts to crinkle, under the arms it crinkles, on the knees it crinkles. And you start to see the discoloration. Well, that's principally due to sun damage. In fact, the whole idea of being a redneck is that the farmers or those who worked outside and in the sun had the sun on their necks, and the neck would be very wrinkled and weathery, almost like a dried out piece of leather. And since I've lived on a farm or a ranch my entire adult life and do so now, I can tell you, being out in the sun feels wonderful, but you better be careful. Now, some people advocate sunblocks, and that's fine. But when you have the sun blocks, you're blocking vitamin D, and that's not good. I prefer, and this is my own personal preference, to take a lot of antioxidants before going in the sun and coming out of the sun, especially vitamin C and quercetin. Very important. So here was this study, and they looked at all these sunscreens and people who use a lot of them and avoided the sun. They found out, not a good idea. You actually live shorter lives. The sun has so many important qualities that the sun phobics end up not benefiting from, including vitamin D, and that makes you less healthy, and that makes you more susceptible to high blood pressure, diabetes, strokes, and heart attacks. In fact, you are less likely to die prematurely from any cause if you've been exposed to the sun. In the absence of vitamin D from sunlight, disease increases more than 1,000%. So this raises hopes that a simple vitamin supplement could reduce lots of major causes of death, vitamin D from sunlight. So I believe in doing it both ways. 25 minutes of direct sunlight over one-third of your body a day will create upwards of 20,000 units of vitamin D in your body. Now, that's not enough sun to create damage, especially if you're taking your vitamin C a couple thousand milligrams before and after. But if you don't take any supplements and you're exposed to the sun, then you're going to end up with sun damage and the probability of precancerous lesions or cancerous lesions. Now, I'm a big believer, after the age of 40, that you should go to your dermatologist and let them do a very detailed analysis of your face, your neck, your hands, your upper back, where you've gotten sun. Now, you may not see it, but they have a way of detecting precancers, and that's when they can take them out without any problem. And generally, they'll do three things. One, they can freeze them. That's what they generally do on your hands. Now, it's not a cancer, but it's a precancer. And they just spray on this chemical, and it freezes it, and it's done once or twice. Inexpensive, or if you have Medicare, it's covered, and most insurance covers, because it's not cosmetic, it's precancerous treatment. And that's the best way of doing it. Two, if it's a little deeper, squamous cell, basal cell, which is slow growing, they can burn it out, and then they scoop it out, and the body heals. In the vast majority of cases, you heal normally, and you're fine, and not even scarring. And then if you have more serious melanoma, which you don't want, because that can spread inside the body, then you have to have it removed. But we're waiting way too long. We're waiting until we've gone from precancer to cancer, and only then reluctantly are we going in to see what can be done about it. So I'm suggesting everyone in this audience over 40, go to your dermatologist, have them check for precancers. And if you've got precancerous lesions, I'm willing to bet every single person listening right now does, who's over the age of 40. Let them get rid of it. It's non-toxic. It's not painful. And then every year, get another evaluation. We could save a lot of lives if we did this. And that's our health and nutrition segment. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about the Mediterranean diet. Does in olives and olive oil really helps our bones in a major way. That could help prevent osteoporosis and thinning of the bones, which is epidemic in our society. Also, I'm going to talk about bringing down the caloric content of your food, how that actually mimics fasting, which then slows your aging process. So one of the best ways in the world to slow aging is go healthy vegan. And I'll show you how to do that and give you even some recipes. That's on tomorrow's program. We're going to take a break and come back. We have a lot to share with you today. Let me just mention that yesterday, about just as I was beginning an in-depth commentary on fascism in the United States and comparing Orwell's dystopian society and Aldous Huxley's with what's actually happening today, which is worse than either of them imagined, we were hacked down. The good news is that when that happened, we had all of our Glenn and our IT team, and they immediately, within 20 minutes, had us back up. But more importantly, we found some identity. So now we're going to go after the people that we believe have been behind trying to take down Progressive Radio Network. And it's only when I'm in commentaries, when I'm doing these commentaries, Well, the whole program could be heard on our archives, so it didn't impact our archives. And you could hear it over the telephones. It didn't impact the telephone. But it did mean that we were off air for the better part of that time over the Internet. And that's one of the reasons I keep emphasizing this. Write down this phone number, because when you lost connection with our station yesterday, all you would have had to do is make a phone call and you could have heard the show live. Let me give you that phone number. Please write it down. One more reason after yesterday's takedown. And by the way, we have a new security system. Anyone trying to take us down again, we will know who they are anywhere in the world. And I brought in the best security experts I could find, because we're the number one voice in the world for progressive issues and causes. There are a lot of good people doing a lot of good work, but you listen to the numbers and you realize how many people are coming and what kind of a threat we represent. And hence they're going to try to stop us in every way they can, which is, I'm not surprised they tried this. Call this number. You can always listen live. Call 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. And that way, if you ever can hear me for any reason, call that number. You can hear the show. Back in a moment. Lots of good stuff still to come. Please stay with us. I think it's time for a dance party just to celebrate the completion of this long and torturous fun drive. And as I've done on 51 occasions, we'll have a free dance party for all those people who supported our sister station, WBAI in New York. I'm planning that. Haven't got the location. It'll be next month, but it's happening. Right now, as of right now, our retreat is full. We thank everyone, and again, we're raising money directly to pay bills directly. So the station's out of money and can't pay for the premiums. So I'm personally buying the premiums from the other producers' programs and paying the station's bills. Do I want to do this? No. But what happens if I don't? If we don't pay for the premiums and the premiums aren't delivered in a timely manner to people, then what's the likelihood that person will support station in the future? With thousands of premiums that were shipped out, which is good, there are a lot more that haven't been. So that's what we're going to do. And tomorrow at 11 a.m., they've asked me to do an hour of fundraising, so I'll do that. Rather than have a whole day of fundraising, it's just 1 hour to help the station. So wherever we can, we will do that. Now, I'm also setting aside some two spots. I thought it would be fun, since someone asked me, they're a chef. Gee whiz, I hear about, you know, all these great dishes and all these meals and vegan and teaching classes. Any room for any interns? Only for chefs. If you are a chef and you have experience, yeah, I'm willing to have maximum of two people come and see how we prepare gourmet vegan meals, but you can't just be a cook. You can't just, you know, be able to throw some food together and want to come and learn how this is done. You have to be a chef, so you can hopefully take this knowledge back and help other people in a restaurant or catering or whatever you do with that. You can call 646-926. No, call this number. Only if you're a chef for the upcoming retreat in August. Come as an intern and learn. 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. Also, for the month of August, not before then, Jason a Progressive Radio Network is allowing some interns to come in and see how you can actually work on radio and produce programming. And so you can call Jason at 646-926-5428. Okay? We're going to listen to The Truth About School from A2. Listen in.
Let's talk about education. In most Western countries, school is compulsory and state-enforced. Truancy can result in fines or even jail time for parents. This isn't just a result of state coercion. On a cultural level, education holds a sacred status much like that of religion. This is an institution that most never question, and that's a problem. Did you ever wonder how it is that kids spend 13 years from kindergarten to high school supposedly being prepared for life, yet when they get out, they don't have any real skills? 13 years and kids aren't taught how to grow a garden, how to build a house, how to fix a car, how to balance a checkbook, or how to cook a healthy meal. 13 years and kids come out without even rudimentary concepts of how to organize or lead groups of people, without even a glimmer of understanding of how to resolve conflicts nonviolently. And we call this an education? Yes, we're taught how to read and write and to perform some basic math, but we aren't taught how to think for ourselves. We aren't taught the principles of logic or how to question an ideology. What we are taught is how to sit in a desk and listen obediently as the world is packaged into a neat little box that we are to accept without question. We're taught to regurgitate that information for tests, to give the answer that those in authority demand. But most of all, we're conditioned to conform. And the reward for faithfully jumping through all of these hoops for 13 years is a worthless piece of paper that no employer even asked to see. Kids exit high school barely qualified to flip burgers at McDonald's. And even for that, they have to be trained. 13 years is a long time. That's most of our childhood. To have this much time taken by force with such pathetic results is unacceptable. The problem here isn't a lack of funding. The problem here isn't poorly trained teachers, lax regulations, or low-quality curriculum. The problem is our entire educational paradigm. The system isn't designed to prepare children for the real world. It's designed to format their minds and condition them for a life of subservience. It's designed to create a population of individuals just smart enough to fill out paperwork and punch a time card, but too stupid to question the system itself or the authority of those running it. If we want to change course, we cannot ignore this aspect of our enslavement. There's no point laboring to wake up other adults in our lives if we send our children to be programmed by the state. The revolution of the mind must include a revolution in education. If this is a message you feel the public needs to hear, then be sure to like, favorite, and share this video.
Okay, now here is a question. If you believe that our educational system needs reforming or changing, how would you do it? I would like for you to write down your opinions and email them, and we'll read them on the air. And Jason's in the studio, and he's going to tell you. For example, I was down in New Orleans filming. And in fact, for those of you who came to see the premiere of Saving the Planet, you saw I was in a schoolyard. That was a schoolyard of a high school, and they had their own organic and completely sustainable garden, and this is the middle of winter. Then I went to the farmer's market, which was just a half a mile away, and there were the students and teachers together selling what they had been growing and sharing the money equally. I thought that was so cool. I really commended them. And then I showed you an empty block that had been obliterated because of Katrina that they had cleaned up and then built completely passive-powered greenhouses. And they must have had 20 greenhouses. And the guy said, "And this one we can grow." And he ripped through all the different clover sprouts, alfalfa sprouts, some mung bean sprouts, sunflower sprouts. And not only did they grow them, they had a more of a demand than what they could supply. And then they had one whole block, an entire city block in the lower Ninth Ward that was about 15 foot high, about 80 foot wide, and over 106 feet long, filled with compost. And where did they get the compost? They went out every night to every restaurant and said, "Can we have your garbage?" People said, "Sure, you know, it saves us from having to throw it away." So they collected all the garbage, took it back, and composted it into soil. After 3 months in that heat and humidity, they then bagged it as organic fertilizer. And they have a thriving market selling organic fertilizer by the bag. Now, mind you, who are these people? The poorest of the poor. Those who had no money, the government didn't help them, their homes were wiped out. And as one of the guys said, and he's 13 years old, and I'm having a conversation with him, he said, look, when Hurricane Katrina came, we were told not to worry because the Corps of Engineers says that, you know, that whole flood wall would not breach, and it breached. He said, then they told us, you know, that it wouldn't be a problem, but it was a problem. We didn't get help, and they closed down the public schools. So we had no schools to go to. So what do you think it's like being a poor kid around poor people where no one's helping you, you have no money, and you can't eat? He said, you know what that means? I said, yeah, you're going to make money any way you can. He said, that's where the drugs. And then suddenly all these drug dealers come around and say, hey, I'll pay you. He said, but instead we said, no, we're going to rebuild our community honorably and ethically. And they started taking abandoned lots, starting with one, and they rehabilitated it completely, all through volunteers. There were about 35, all living within a block, and now it's a thriving business. They have a school there. They teach a school, and they kept saying, look for the guy with the bus. And I say, what's his name? We don't know. What's the bus look like? What's kind of psychedelic? So I'm driving all over, all over New Orleans asking, you seen the psychedelic bus? Nope. Until I saw it. It was down this old street that you couldn't get a car down. There were potholes and trees down and a boat in a tree. I mean, you think they went and cleaned it up? No, it was still devastated. But this is the guy who brought down his ideas from Brooklyn and helped these guys, a school teacher. So I met him, and he's in this school, and he's teaching them about how to grow things and then how to sell what they grow and how to take garbage and turn it into compost and how to sell the compost as fertilizer. And now you have other people in the neighborhood saying, can we learn from you? So every day they have classes teaching the other poor. Now, this is on no news nationally. Self-sufficiency, community effort, working together for a common goal in an ethical, moral way that helps people's health, organic stuff. So in any case, why isn't that taught in school? Why don't we have a class in school where every school in America could have a garden, could have on the roof or inside, could have a hydroponic house? So if you believe that there are ways that we can better inform the students to allow them to be more critical thinkers, have tools that actually help them in the real world, then I'd like for you to email us. I want you to email Jason. Now, Jason's in studio with me now. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Gary. Good afternoon. Let me just give you my quick email address. It's just J, then T as in Tom, A-U, B as in boy, E-N, F as in Frank, E-L-D, @GaryNull.com.
Better say that again, slow.
J-T-A-U-B-E-N-F-E-L-D @GaryNull.com. Please send any emails to us. We'll definitely be proud to read them on the air.
And if for any reason someone didn't get it, give me your phone number.
646-926-5428.
Okay, good.
Right, just to go over, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Now, what Jason is in here for is that people believe there's only one truth, the official truth. And hence we have to take the New York Times as our truth, even when Judith Miller is banging the drums for war in Iraq, with the certainty that her informer, Curveball, which was a plant from Cheney's office, the vice president had it, ran his own secret cabal of CIA agents out of his office in order to plant misinformation. And if he's ever brought up on trial, a whole group of scholars will bring that information forward. We were broadcasting that information that the real CIA agents were saying there are no weapons of mass destruction, there's no attachment with Al-Qaeda, and Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11, and Cheney's office is telling just the opposite because it created its own intelligence. So you see, we have to nail them for crimes against humanity because they can't be protected if they found that they intentionally, with malice aforethought, broke the laws that they are put in office to uphold. After all, you don't take a oath to protect Cheney or the President of the United States. You take an oath to protect the Constitution. So anyhow, official sources have been corrupted, compromised, or self-censored. Therefore, there are a handful, maybe I'm going to suggest 100 really viable great sources, Truthdig and the other places out there that are sharing information on a regular basis. I do not include a lot of the left publications in that because they've been substantially compromised. But there are good places. Probably the best of them all is Global Research. But we are up right up at the top of that. And I just want to show you the numbers of people coming on a regular basis to read articles, to become informed, information that can help them make legislation possible, to challenge and argue existing people who are on the establishment side, whether it's in the vaccines or nuclear, or whether it's hydrofracking or the quality of the American diet, whatever it is, we're going to provide you with information. Could you share just the numbers with people?
Sure. Luckily, through our phone service that people get to call and listen to our show 24/7, in the last 12 months, we had over 7,200,000 minutes alone.
Wow.
That's just in 12 months. Okay. In 12 months, on our Facebook page, Gary Null, you can check, there was over a post reach, over 100 million different posts were reached. That means articles that were read. That means podcasts that were listened to, different organizations that we promoted that to get their name out there.
Helping other organizations that are doing good work. We bring people to them, and that's the cooperative, working together cooperatively for a common goal, 100 million people. Okay. What else?
And then just weekly people just joining PRN and just going there to check out the articles and the podcast as well, 210,000.
That's just weekly. Last week.
Yeah, 100%.
210,000 people just in the last 7 days.
100%. Right? And then just going to our YouTube channel, where there's a few different YouTubes, but our main one has over 3 million hits in the last 12 months on different movies that you've put from Poverty Inc.
That means watching films, because we put them up there for free as a public service. 3.5 million watches just on that one channel.
Yeah, and then just when people go check out the titles of your and Google searches, Poverty Inc., over 44 million. Seeds of Death, 86 million. War on Health, 455 million searches. So that's amazing that people are searching them.
War on Health, 455 million.
Yep.
Almost a half a billion. Yep.
Searching.
Okay, so when people think that there's only one truth, they're not aware of how many progressives are, and especially younger people.
100%.
Lots of young people. So thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Gary.
Now, before we go to our guest, I'm going to play Prince EA, Why I Got Rid of My Friends.
Hey, you. If I came into your house right now and dumped this garbage on your bedroom floor, what you going to do about it? Beat me up? Shoot me? Have me arrested? One thing's for sure, for years you be telling people about the guy that had the nerve to come into your house and dump garbage on your bedroom floor. But think about this. Every day we allow and even encourage people to dump garbage into our minds and into our lives. See, contrary to popular belief, you don't just consume nutrients through food by way of your mouth. You also consume through your eyes and through your ears. You ever wonder why you're feeling negative or angry? It's because your input determines your output. The garbage that you listen to on the radio, the trash you see on TV, the bullshit that you hear from the people that you hang out with, it rubs off on you. Everybody talks about GMOs. Stay away from GMOs. Well, stay away from the human GMOs, the greedy, the miserable, the obnoxious. These people are toxic. They drain you. They complain. They remind you of your mistakes. They tear you down. They gossip. They aren't there for you when you need them. And some of these people are even in your family. But these aren't necessarily evil people. They're just trapped in a cycle themselves. But that's their problem, not yours. You can't fix them. You have to fix yourself and become an example for them. So politely, just give yourself some space from these people. Or else you're going to end up just like them. You keep hanging out with losers, you're going to wind up picking up the qualities of a loser. Hang out with people that encourage you and empower you to become the best version of yourself. You deserve that. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to be you. So figure out what you want out of life, because you're going to be the only one with you for the rest of it. Life is short. And as a wise woman once said, fake friends, negative friends, ain't nobody got time for that. Peace.
Thank you. That was Prince EA. And every day we post different. I post about 100 posts a day. And by the way, if you've noticed how many beautiful scenes of nature and animals of all species loving each other, it's because I believe each day we should smile and appreciate all the gifts that nature has provided us. And it's always good when you get so much heavy stuff and so much intense stuff to balance it out. Now let's go to our Skype interview with John Potash, As I said earlier, he's an investigative journalist, human rights activist, social worker, and we're here to talk about how the U.S. government, the CIA, have used drugs as weapons against Americans. Nice to have you with us today, John.
Thanks for having me on, Gary.
I would like to focus primarily on the CIA and U.S. intelligence infiltration of leading activists and popular icons during the 50s through the early 70s, when the anti-war and civil rights movements were at their height. This was all part of what was known as MK-Ultra, the CIA's operation to experiment and disseminate brainwashing and mind control methods to either control people or to pacify dissension against the official status quo, the government's war policies. And why this is important today is because if the U.S. government in the past would go to such lengths to destroy Americans' lives and commit horrendous human rights violations, even murder, to achieve its goals, then we should not delude ourselves that U.S. intelligence has repented and would never repeat these kinds of operations. Instead, as we see democracy completely eroding away and the rule of oligarchy and the police state on a large scale, we should be even more concerned about what the government is capable of. And also, we still live with a myth that the 50s and 60s drug culture gave birth to many new ideas, new forms of nonviolent protest and activism and sexual liberation and alternative lifestyles. It spurned the modern women's movement and more anti-racist initiatives within minority communities. In fact, many people still look at the rapid rise of the hallucinogenic use among the popular 60s rock stars like the Beatles and Rolling Stones and Jimi Hendrix as positive contributions. I don't. To the 60s idealism, it wasn't about the world's possibility for peace, love, and global cooperation. It's naive. Nevertheless, we barely consider the possibility that such pacifist views were the intention of the U.S. intelligence agencies, and the CIA and its money interest had a role in creating the 60s subculture and dropping out and leaving behind radical dissent and protest. Now, you've covered so much in your research. Therefore, I'd like you to speak first about how the CIA managed to pacify and thereby disrupt and dissolve the more dedicated radical activist efforts such as the SDS and campus organizations and activist movements in the minority populations against the Vietnam War and civil injustice and racial segregation. The forum is yours.
Thanks, Gary. Yeah, I really appreciate that synopsis of the book. And I also I'm glad that you mentioned Global Research, because they've come to be my favorite media source at the moment, too. So the name of the book is Drugs as Weapons Against Us, subtitled CIA's Murderous Targeting of SDS, Panthers, Hendrix, Lennon, Cobain, Tupac, and Other Activists. And so in the second chapter, I go into how MKUltra was formed by the oligarchy that rose up through making tons of money through shipping opium. And they founded the CIA, according to many good sources on that. And the CIA, the most influential of the CIA, and the CIA formed MKUltra with many sub-operations. And with that, now there's been, they shredded the documents on MKUltra in the early 70s, but researchers have found 30,000 of those documents unshredded in the financial departments. And what they uncovered is the fact that they used undercover agents all over the country, but also they sent CIA agents such as Robert Lashbrook to London to spread acid to musicians there. And what the reason they did this, I argue, and I show the evidence, I show the intelligence documents that quote the fact that they wanted to use LSD to manipulate people. Okay, and that was their goal, and I show how they accomplished that. So they took people that were already popular that they thought would be susceptible to manipulate to start to get to use LSD, such as, of course, the people we love, John Lennon, Mick Jagger, the Rolling Stones, and Jimi Hendrix. And they were actually their first hits of acid. For example, Mick Jagger's first hit of acid came from an undercover FBI agent. And this came out in A.E. Hotchner's book. A.E. Hotchner was Ernest Hemingway's longtime editor, and he wrote a great book about the Rolling Stones called Blown Away, where he says Robert Lashbrook, CIA agent for MKUltra, went to London, and that was his job, was to get acid in as many musicians' hands as possible in 1965. And Steve Abrams was one of his agents, he quotes also about that. And so then you get a London Time Daily newspaper saying that this guy named Schneiderman slash alias Jove was, and they show a picture of him with his arms around, arm in arm with Keith Richards. says that this guy was actually an undercover FBI agent, and he's the one that Hotchner says, you know, got Jagger to try acid for the first time in 1967. Mick Jagger was the last holdout to try acid in the Rolling Stones. And then, of course, after he tried the acid, the police came in and busted them and had them under their legal thumb. And the reason why, I argue, is one, to popularize the acid, because they finally got one of the most popular people in London using acid. Secondly, to get the Stones under the legal authority's thumb to control them more, because Jagger and Brian Jones were the most anti-Vietnam War. They had said it vocally. They had gone to Vietnam War protests. And finally, I argue that it causes some damage and diverts them from their good work in both trying to do activism while they do music and while they do other things. And I argue that it does that to all of us. And so by doing that, and then at the time that Lashbrook was handing acid out and getting acid out to musicians, John, in 1965, John Lennon had his first hit of acid. And his first hit of acid came at a dinner party that him and George Harrison were at with their partners and George Harrison's dentist and his partner. And so it was the six of them, and the dentist convinces them to stay for dessert and have this special coffee. And it turns out they drink the coffee and say, "We got to run." And they say, "No, but you can't, because you just had LSD. And John Lennon was furious, and George Harrison says, "What's LSD?" He didn't even know what it was then. And this dentist dosed their coffee with LSD. And so the fact that this dentist did that without worrying about getting sued, getting charged with assault, or anything like that, shows that he was in that network. But I show other evidence that he could have been in that network that Lashbrook was trying to use to get people, you know, these musicians using LSD. Now, in the United States, you had Timothy Leary, who I quote from several interviews where he admits that he was working for the CIA at a certain period in the 60s onwards. And what he said is similar to the way you described it all, Gary, was turn on, tune in, drop out. And drop out of what? Drop out of civil rights activism that more and more youth were getting involved in the mid-60s when he was saying that. Drop out of anti-war activism, which more and more youth were getting involved in as he was saying that. And what the media did in its, there's a whole chapter or two just on media control by the oligarchs, as you mentioned before, but also by the CIA. The Senate Church Committee, documented that, how well over 400 members of the media lived dual lives in their work for the CIA. And those weren't just regular journalists, but those were the ownership of all the major media. And former Watergate muckraker Carl Bernstein published an excellent article on that called CIA and the Media in Rolling Stone magazine in 1977. But nonetheless, so by getting these musicians using the acid, they could then popularize it even more through the media to get more and more, up-and-coming youth and left-wing youth using acid and divert them from their best activism. And so I show examples how undercover agents infiltrated Abbie Hoffman's group. Abbie Hoffman's first hit of acid came from an MKUltra scientist, and it caused the divorce of him and his wife. His wife was an excellent activist also. He left his kids, too, in the Boston area, came down to New York, and then began, I argue, to be manipulated into promoting acid to left-wing activists around the country with the Yippies, even though he also did some good work. He was being manipulated, I argue. And so some of the people that were manipulating him was a guy, an undercover agent named George Demarly. George Demarly was trained at Quantico for the FBI, and he ended up coming out in trial saying, "Yes, I'm an undercover agent." And Demarly formed an offshoot group of the Yippies called the Crazies. And so I showed documentation that the Crazies, that the Columbia Students for Democratic Society, who were the leading chapter of the Students for Democratic Society, because they were the first one to take over the whole campus in revolt against the Vietnam War and also to fight racism, they were anti-LSD. They said they thought it was anti-revolutionary. But finally, at a party in a summer, the Crazies dosed their punch, according to eyewitness accounts, and they convinced Mark Rudd, the head of the SDS at Columbia, and other leaders of SDS there, that acid was good. And so they continued to trip after that, and ended up starting to promote acid after first saying, "We're against acid." And show how Mark Rudd, as great of an activist as he was before the acid, his behavior became very erratic after that. He lauded not reading a book for over a year. him and Bernadine Dorn as great of an activist as she was, being a national leader of SDS, when they formed their offshoot group, you know, when they broke off SDS and then became part of the Weather Underground and were leaders of the Weathermen and the Weather Underground, Bernadine Dorn started lauding Manson at a at a Weather Underground conference, calling it the Year of the Fork in commemoration of the Manson murderer who stuck a fork in pregnant Sharon Tate's belly. And they also lauded Sirhan Sirhan for killing Robert F. Kennedy at that conference. And I argue it's because they were being manipulated and their head was got too messed up on the acid. Now, I also show evidence that after they got away from the acid a bit, they got back into better activism and did better work after that. But it takes a while. It takes a while to get away from the residual effects of the acid.
John, I have a hypothesis I'd like to propose. You tell me if you have any evidence.
Sure.
Again, I want to let the audience know this is purely a hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time in America where Pacifica Foundation and its 5 broadcasting stations was the most powerful voice for progressive issues and causes and was the number one source of insight and information against the forces of the establishment at that time, against the war in Vietnam, against the Watergate issues. But what we have seen is we've seen the destruction of Pacifica, literally to where today it can't even pay its payroll. And there's nothing but conflicts and fighting in every station. Local station boards, they're like watching scorpions in a cocktail glass fight each other to the death, except they're immune to each other, so they just fight forever. And the National Foundation's the same. So as a result, Pacifica is irrelevant to everything, everywhere. Now, there are individual producers or individual people within management on the national board and local board who are very conscientious and really keen on helping. And every time they make an effort to do something that would help, they're those who undermine it. So my question is this. Is it possible that people from MKUltra and others saw the Pacifica represented the greatest threat, more of a threat than a Mick Jagger, because it represented a vehicle for millions of people to get their information? So if they could destroy Pacific from the inside, which has been done,
right,
and is no longer what it once was, is no longer listened to because of what it once was. Individual shows are, but you ought to see how we've lost 90% of the audience in all the stations.
Oh, wow.
Could it be because of this, or is that merely because of people who were interested in power and their own agenda taking over, and then the consequences of unprofessional people being put in the positions because they were politically correct but managerially unprepared for the challenges have ruined the foundation? Your thoughts on this?
Well, I don't have a lot of evidence about infiltration at WBAI, but I sympathize with your calls on that, and I've seen some, evidence that makes me believe that it could be true. But the one piece of evidence I do have about WBAI, and it was really sad for me to come across this, was the fact that a number of these Pacifica stations do promote these Grateful Dead hours that are more than an hour even, but huge amounts of time promoting playing the Grateful Dead, promoting the Grateful Dead. And I have at least one or two, if not three chapters, showing the evidence that the Grateful Dead, sadly enough, because I did like their music, they have been kind of manipulated and controlled from day one by MKUltra scientists. And it's still going on to this day that they are some of the biggest promoters of LSD in our country, if not internationally. And they gain more radio play than any other band in history, and I argue that it's got to be more than just because of their good music. I do enjoy their music, but there's more to it than that. This John Gittinger, a high-level MKUltra scientist, said in a legal deposition that him and two other MKUltra scientists were at several of the first acid tests, where the Grateful Dead were the band that played at all the acid tests when they were called the Warlocks. And the Mellon Hitchcock family, Peggy and Billy Mellon Hitchcock, The family, you know, started Gulf Oil. They're part of Mellon Bank, you know, Carnegie Mellon and all that. So they're one of the wealthiest families in the world. And they're also deeply connected with U.S. intelligence. And they started the group that was most spreading LSD. They were behind Leary, and then they were also behind Owsley, that was part of the acid distribution network that was most associated with the Grateful Dead. And then they were also had Ronald Stark as part of their group. And Ronald Stark was caught in Italy by police trafficking LSD. And a judge ended up letting him off, and an Italian governmental commission ended up finding that Ronald Stark had been connected to the American Secret Services since 1960. And so he was part of U.S. intelligence, and he had acid laboratories on at least three continents.
We're out of time. So all we know is that the U.S. intelligence agencies and the FBI infiltrated groups, movements, mm-hmm. got them hooked on drugs, a way of discrediting them, a way of controlling their messages, and the public has not been aware of this. And right. that's the message. We can only look to the future to see what impact it's had. Now, you said that the CIA acknowledged in a major investigative repeat by Carl Bernstein, that over 500 people, and I was told it was 1,000 plus people in the media, mm-hmm. were also working with the CIA. Right. So how in the world did they do this without anyone paying attention to it? And how many of those people today in the media, all media, including, you know, the left media, how is it possible that they're not still doing it, and they still don't have the, maybe not with drugs anymore, but right. with political messages that cause dissent and divisiveness and cause polarization. And so it's something that we should continue to be open to see what evolves. Thank you very much, John, for your
Thanks so much for having me on, Gary.
And John's book is called Drugs as Weapons Against Us, the CIA's Murderous Targeting of the Black Panthers, Jimi Hendrix, John Lennon, and other activists. And we appreciate his work. I'm out of time today. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.